If you've struggled with stress, balance, or burnout, and simply feel discouraged or even defeated, and if you're ready to move from force to flow and enjoy ultimate Zen success in your career, health, or relationships, then the Zen Success Show is for you. Your host, Carissa Sims, is an entrepreneur, corporate consultant, best-selling author, meditation teacher, and healer who has found her own Zen success. Here's your host, Carissa Sims.
Welcome to this week's episode of Zen Success. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dimitri Moraitis. Let me share a little bit more about Dimitri. He has been helping souls grow at the Spiritual Arts Institute, the school he co-founded with the Mozart of metaphysics, Barbara Martin. His nonprofit is known as a premier metaphysical school by thousands of students around the world. Oh my gosh, I'm so happy to connect with you. Welcome, Dimitri.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, it's great. You have so much joy and laughter. I just love your energy. It's wonderful. And I'm connecting from Colorado. Where are you connecting from today?
San Diego area, Encinitas, North County, which is kind of a spiritual mecca here. I say in our town, there's two cardinal virtues, yoga and surfing. We're by the water.
Yeah. And sometimes together, right? Yeah. Well, yoga, yeah. On the surfboard.
There's actually a full mural, and it's done respectfully, of the Madonna on a surfboard, you know.
Oh, wonderful. You're like, it's not blasphemous, I promise. Yeah, no, it's spiritual. That's amazing. I actually did yoga on a surfboard in Mexico, and it was like the hardest thing. I mean, I've done a lot of things.
Surfing's hard enough as it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yoga is challenging enough. Yeah, you're right. But we did cheat a little bit because we had little ropes tying the... Oh, they were actually paddle boards. I'll have to be honest. It was not an actual surfboard. So they're, yeah, flatter and everything. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Right? It's a single-minded pursuit when you're doing surfing and when you're meditating, right? When you're doing, yeah. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Good point. Well, I love that area. Actually, my father and grandmother lived in Carlsbad.
Oh,
so, and my dad lived, yeah. And then my dad moved to San Diego. So I grew up in Alaska and then San Diego.
Holy cow, that's a little different.
Yeah. Yeah. But you said before we started recording, you said that you were born here in Colorado.
In Denver, Colorado. Yeah. 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 My parents emigrated from Greece, and my father was a doctor, and he did his residency, and then they both fell in love with it and, you know, made this their home. Yeah. So, but yeah, I have very fond, my first memories are from Canada, because it was an unusual immigration policy. If you wanted to become a citizen, you had to leave the country for 2 years to prove your desire. And so either they were-
That is very unusual. I had never heard of that.
Yeah. Well, we went to, it was either an English-speaking country or go back to Greece, and they chose Canada. So actually, my first memories are from Canada and British Columbia.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then back there. But I always loved Denver. There was something going up into those mountains. It was a mystical place in a way. I don't know if someone would have called it that at the time, but they're so grand and beautiful. And also, I love California. I've been here actually, my God, for almost 40 years. And
Wow, that is a long time. You really love it. Yeah.
A long time. We were in LA for a long time. Barbara was there 75 years, right? She was there in the golden age of Hollywood. But then we had the opportunity to open a center here, a physical center, because this is such a mecca. I mean, people come to this area because of spirituality. And so we've been building ever since. It's a great community here. But of course, we do things online long before the era of Zoom. We were doing it, you know, before.
You were. That's amazing.
Yeah, we had what you call the blended learning. So you can be in a classroom, and then there are the jumbo monitors and the cameras. And so, like, if you were joining a class, there could be a physical class here. You'd be joining online. You'd be seeing us. We'd be seeing you on the 80-inch jumbo monitors. And it's a blended learning, you know, which is now quite popular. Yeah.
Wow, you were really a pioneer in that. That's incredible. Because you just saw the value. Did you know about TV production? And
well, I came from that world, right? I was trained in film and TV. I was actually going to be a movie maker when I came out, and I had this spiritual awakening, which kind of took me in a different direction. But what happened was, originally we were doing just LA classes, but we were doing all this touring and traveling with our books, and it was like you meet all these great people, and then, well, bye. You know, it was over, yeah. Right? So in 2006, we were able to merge the two. So you had the in-person online. It really changed the whole complexion of the Institute. But boy, in those days, you were lucky to keep a stable connection for an hour and a half. It wasn't like today, it's much more streamlined. Then it was very creaky, let's put it that way. The internet was not as strong as it is today. But God, that stood the, you know, they didn't give up, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure at that time you guys were used to little blips and, you know, you just let it go and, you know, just carry on.
Remember, you know, sometimes, you know, moms would be taken into little, usually moms are not doing the cool thing, right? The kids are doing but the kids are like, what are you doing, mom? What is that? What are you on there? You know, it was like, that was the cutting edge in those days.
Yeah. That's amazing. Oh my gosh. I just love your joy. I just keep saying it. So in LA, where did you live in LA? And tell me about that journey from film school to your awakening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, boy, there's a lot to say there. Because interestingly enough, even though Barbara's of a different generation than myself, she went through a similar thing, right? Because her father was a Greek Orthodox priest with a family of six. They would travel all over the country because he actually built churches as well as led them.
Oh, and wow. So that's kind of in alignment with her.
Yeah. Yeah. She had a very religious, although they didn't understand her metaphysical. She said, I was getting ostracized for that. So I learned to keep it quiet. But then he was assigned to build a church in Pasadena, California. And when the family came here, and this is Depression era stuff, right? The mom just basically said, you know, you go wherever the church sends you, the family is staying in LA. We're not moving anymore. Right. So they settled there. That was literally the golden age of Hollywood. And Barbara initially got involved with showbiz herself. And she put on the show with 300 people and all. And then, but she got the clear direction, though, metaphysics is your direction. Right. Because LA does attract a lot of metaphysical people in the whole Southern California.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then now me, here's later, I was, you know, I was going to LA to pursue a film career. It was actually going quite well.
Tell me about that.
I was having these, you know, I was not interested in metaphysics at that time, but, you know, when you're in art, you in music, I was doing a lot of music too. You're in tune with the muse, the non,
and yeah.
The non-rational part of you.
Yeah. What kind of music?
A classical piano. I was a classical.
Oh, beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I should say still is, although I don't play very much now. Yeah. But I was having these inspirational moments, and I just thought, oh, okay, I'm feeling very elevated right now. But
yeah,
strong that it was like this major awakening. I call it my Saul in the Road to Damascus moment. It was not gradual. It was dramatic. But I still initially didn't understand what it was. And then when I realized it was metaphysics, I couldn't get enough of it. And literally about a year later, I met Barbara at a dinner party. She led a meditation. It was the first time I ever really meditated. Again, I felt it so deeply. And I was kind of feeling what I was already feeling on my own. And when she started to put all these pieces together, I immediately that night, I said, I found my teacher. And we started as a, you know, started student-teacher relationship, but we both loved to write. And I didn't realize it at the time, but she was kind of grooming me to be sort of her, you know, successor. And eventually, some years later, we said, Barbara, we got to organize all these teachings because everything was kind of inspirational at the time. And then we started what was to become the Institute. And then I really redirected. You know, I say film is a jealous mistress, right? The entertainment wants all of you. You cannot share the wealth there a little bit, especially the direction I was going in. And I just, my heart wasn't in it. I love entertainment and movies and things, but I knew my life's mission was to pursue the metaphysical, not just personally, but as a career. And of course, Barbara was a pioneer in the field. At the time, she was well known for the aura, you know, one of the world's leading aura readers, specialists. And she said, you know, I was doing it before Kirlian photography. The first time someone actually called me on the phone to lecture on the aura as a paid, I dropped the phone. I really, you wanted to, you know, it was before anybody was really interested in this. So it was a lot of pioneering. And even in those last 20 years, has been a lot of pioneering. But it's nice to see how things like meditation, you have apps now for meditation, right? Yoga is being taught even in school. I mean, that was unheard of, right? 30 years ago, this was like a hippie thing to do. But now it's become more mainstream and I think more mature. And people are asking more about, you know, spiritual growth. And there's an evolution. It's really nice to see that because for a while, it was a little bit like the circus floor. They were interested in the phenomenal things of the industry. Now they're really focusing a little bit more on growth.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Now, have you ever merged the two as far as you think about making a movie about what you're doing or, you know, interviewing other spiritual leaders, you know, because you have that passion for entertainment? Have you ever thought of that or have you done that?
Well, no, it's still something I would like to do, quite frankly.
Yeah.
We initially tried to write some scripts around it and my team, they were not into it. One just said, I got to be honest with you, I was just joking with my colleagues about people interested in this stuff. So the industry was not focused on that genre, you know. But it is changing now. You know, now there's much more of a shifting. I have to say, running the Institute and writing books and all that, there isn't a lot of free time. But
well, good point. I'm giving you more projects.
I'll tell you one real interesting story. This goes back to Barbara, though. So again, she was part of the golden age of Hollywood, and she was invited to the movie set of Cecil B. DeMille, you know, the great filmmaker of his day, the Ten Commandments, the show of shows.
Mm-hmm. And what was she doing in Hollywood?
Well, she was actually, so very interesting, right? So her brothers were in entertainment.
Okay. Right?
And her oldest brother was an opera singer. Her youngest was an actor competing with people like James Dean in his day.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but she would hear, you know, the actors talk about, oh, I can't find work. You know, it's a common theme up there. And she would see all this talent in their aura. And says, well, wait a minute. What are we waiting for? Let's put on our own shows.
So she started
organizing. This was like during the war years, right? Variety shows and thing. Right after the war, she'd go to the different, here we have Camp Pendleton and different bases. And she got
so producer, director of shows, like live shows, not
Red
movies.
Scale would be part of them, this, that, the other. But, you know, there was a crossover, right? You're in the entertainment world. So she started to know a lot of the movie people. And she knew Billy Greenwald, one of the casting directors at Paramount. And, you know, Cecil B. DeMille was shooting The Greatest Show on Earth. And he said, go to the set, but you have to be so careful because he's very strict on the set. Don't pretend almost like you're not there, right? So she says she goes into there. It's very dark, these big sets. And, you know, he's on the big boom and directing. He is a little bit directorial, you know, eat that popcorn. You know, he was even paying attention to what the extras were doing. And she finally sat in it and she thought, okay, I just sat in the chair. Well, she said, you know, as the stars were coming in, even Mona, you know, they were waving to her like they knew her. And he goes, why do they act like they know me? You know, Lucille Ball, I guess, was there and some others. And then she realized, oh my God, I'm sitting in Cecil B. DeMille's chair. Like the one thing you're not supposed to do, right? And she thought, oh my God, I'm definitely going to be thrown off this set, you know. So he yelled cut. He came down the boom. She's trying to gather things and leave. And then she says, on my shoulder, my hand goes there. It's him. He's putting his hand on my shoulder, right? And so, okay, I'm a goner. Billy's going to hate me for this. Turns around and he says to her, well, what did you think of that last shot? You know, and she goes, oh, loved it, CB. It was beautiful. It was great, you know. But when she turned around, when they looked at each other, she saw the mystic sight in him.
Oh.
And he saw it in her.
In other words,
She was extremely clairvoyant at that point, and it turned out he was too.
Ah, so there was soul connection, like they were vibrating at the same level or something.
Well, they understood each other on an inner, and no one understood what was going on because he usually didn't.
Oh, yeah.
He was treating her like somebody, you know. Like, yeah, they became friends. You know, unfortunately, it was near the end of his life. But the point I'm making is, in his case, he was a great mystic, but his mission was not to be a mystical teacher. His mission was to be not just an entertainer. You know, he's kind of, I guess he was kind of the Spielberg of his day. He had his extremely successful. But look at, you know, they say the Ten Commandments, when it was released, it helped people find God again.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, because he isn't following the path that you and Barbara did doesn't mean he made a big difference in people's lives.
Right, right. He was doing. Now, other people, like there was a famous spiritual teacher here called Manly Hall. Barbara met him too. Now, he had the mystic side as well, but he was a spiritual teacher. So his professional path was to do that. Now, for a time, I thought, well, maybe I'll do this mystic work privately and be in the entertainment. But then I started to realize, no, actually, I didn't realize it right away, but I was meant to be a teacher, not a film. But what I tell people is follow your bliss. If I had never gone to LA to pursue movies, I never would have found what my real calling was. So you don't always know that your bliss is not a destination, but it's the next step in the destination of where you need to go. And I had a comfortable life in Chicago. At the time, I was living in Chicago with my family, and I could have a very comfortable life, built a nice family. You know, all that was kind of waiting for me there. Calling to go.
You were married with kids or something?
No. I was only like 25 at the time.
You mean your family, your immediate family, like your mom and dad. Okay, got it.
Family there. I could have built
Yeah, you could have built a life there.
A very comfortable and happy life there. Chicago's a great place to raise kids and do things like that.
Yeah.
But there was this other calling that took me somewhere else. And all I say to people is follow what your heart is prompting you to do. Do listen. Don't be, hard-headed about it. But you don't know always, especially in this mystical journey, you don't always know how it's going to lead you to point A to B to C to D, but it will lead you if you follow the path.
Yeah, that was your destiny. It's when God winks and you think it's film, but it's actually taking you there to get inspired to be a metaphysical teacher. That's incredible. It's obvious that you have a lot of respect for Barbara sharing these touching personal stories. I'll just say that not many people coming on my show talk about other people's journey. So I feel a deep connection, obviously, between you two.
Look, one thing you'll learn here, I know we're in a very self-made era, you know, we're self-help, self this, you know, and we have to do our own growing, but without a teacher at the right time, there's no way you're going to cross certain thresholds. I like to joke, okay, you could read a couple books on brain surgery, take a couple weekend workshops, but you're not ready to perform brain surgery, right? You have to go through years, decades of training for that. I could have read every book in the Library of Congress on metaphysics and not learned what I learned from Barbara. Yeah, so I wouldn't be where I am without her, you know, without what she did. And, you know, when someone does that much for you, I guess you could say that about parents and children, you can't repay it directly. But you repay it by giving out the same way, right? A child will never repay all that it did for the parents did for them, but they can do it by being a great adult or a great parent themselves, or, you know, fulfilling what they did in there. And that's what I'm hoping to be able to do in my humble little way.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I wondered if you could share a little bit about the art behind you. Can you share about that? And then you have a Himalayan salt. Underneath.
Well, that piece right there is by Jonathan Wilshire, and he actually has done the illustrations for our latest book, Heaven and Your Spiritual Evolution. So he lives actually in Carlsbad. Oh no, I'm sorry, he lives in San Marcos, very nearby.
Yeah, very
there's
close.
There's a spiritual retreat here called Quest Haven, and it was run by a woman, Flower Newhouse, who was a mystic herself, and he became part of that group. And he was always interested in art, but he was also always interested in the sort of art of the other side. You know, so this is supposed to be an image from the other side, right?
And yeah, it looks like heaven.
Yeah, exactly. I forget what he calls it, but we saw that illustrations, and you know, and it's fine art, by the way. It's not Photoshop. It's not, you know, mm-hmm. it's oil
detail.
We knew, very talented. Yeah, when we did this book on, because the book on heaven and spiritual evolution is about what the other side is like. So we gave him these guidelines, but then he took each of the images, there's like eight in the book, and he did these fine art illustrations, and he just captured the feeling. Maybe not, it's always, you know, literally accurate, but he captured the mood of what the other side is about. And again, I think he's a marvelous artist. So I encourage anybody to look up his art. I think you can buy his prints, and you can buy these prints and also the book prints from our books as well. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Can you share a little bit about your latest book?
Yeah. Well, this one, so we're writing a series of seven books right now.
Okay.
Called The Seven Spiritual Arts.
Beautiful.
Liberal arts, right, teaches you to prepare yourself for the intellectual rigors of life, right? It's how to be discerning, how to be analytical, how to be this. So the seven spiritual arts prepare you for the spiritual rigors of the demands of life. And there's different arts, the aura, healing, karma, the angels, the mind, you know, the spiritual keys of living, the heart. But this one's the broad picture, the one we just finished, heaven and your spiritual evolution, is the big picture of metaphysics. Why are you even studying this? What does it mean to be on a spiritual path? Mm. What does it mean to grow spiritually? You ask 20 people, what is spiritual growth? You're going to get 20 different answers, right? If you say, what does it mean to grow from a child to an adult? We kind of understand that process, right? But not the spiritual growth. So this book goes into that. It goes into, first of all, hoping, if, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners, our viewers, must have had already some type of spiritual awakening, or they wouldn't be listening to your podcast. Mm-hmm. So that means the door has already been opened for them. They may not fully mm-hmm. understand it yet, but it's not like someone that hasn't had the awakening, right? And you can't force someone if they haven't had it. You know, if I had met Barbara even 2 years before this time, I would have not recognized her, you know, as my teacher, right?
Oh, so wow.
There was this calling. So if you've had the calling, and I mean everyone, you know, watching,
listening,
yeah, please pursue it. It's not accidental. Don't shelve it. Don't say, I'll get to this, you know, when I retire or after I finish raising my kid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, pursue it now, because it can coincide and help with these other things going on in your life.
Yeah, that's such wonderful advice. And I would say that sometimes my show attracts people who are not awakened, but are curious, because I have a generic title. Zen Success doesn't necessarily mean metaphysical or spiritual. So I can draw people in who are, maybe it's their destiny to be awakened, and maybe this will help them on their path, or maybe they'll switch the podcast and be like, it's too woo-woo or spiritual. But that's what I really hope to do, you're right, is crack people open on their journey.
Well, and sometimes the opening is very gradual.
Wow. You
know, it's not, mine happened to be dramatic, but for others, they could have had an interest from childhood, right? And through the years,
that was me. I was gradual.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that is actually, in a sense, more common. Mm-hmm. But let's say, even using the word Zen, that it is a spiritual term. So it is,
that's true.
Not like, oh, scientific success.
Yeah. The scientific basis. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So already. And what that does is it slowly conditions the consciousness, right? So each of us have our own path. Now, the only thing I would say there is, yes, for a while we are, you could use the word curious, or, oh, it's mm-hmm. an interest of mine. But what generally happens at a certain point is it starts in that, and it could be that for many years. But at some point you may say, well, I really need to do something about this now. I need to go from the interest, curious stage to the active stage, you know. We've even had people in our own classes say, you know, I've had your book for 10 years before I took a class. So it doesn't mean, you know, exposure to something doesn't mean immediately I'm going to do something about it. And you don't want to push because it's kind of like a flower germinating. You know, it's going to bloom in its own time. If you yell it and say, come on, I water you, for God's sakes, you know, it's not going to help the flower any, right?
So that's true. Plants have energy. There have been many studies on that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. And also the journey is beautiful, however long it takes. And that's the whole reason why we're here, I think, is that that spiritual journey and whatever it is for you is all beautiful and incredible and unfolds in its own way and its own time.
Right. And the only thing I would urge people, today is an unusual time, spiritually speaking.
Okay, but it's opening up more. You mean like the veils are
exactly.
It's an opportunity.
Not accidental, right? Okay, we're learning more about the physical universe, but that's beckoning us to learn more about the spiritual universe and the spiritual roots of things. So there is what we call a spiritual potential. So ultimately, we're all mystics in the making, and we believe also in the idea of reincarnation, that you come here many times in each life, like a grade in school. But for this lifetime, we're meant to hit a certain peak in terms of our spiritual development.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So just like you're supposed to leave this world better than the way you found it, you're supposed to leave this world at a higher level of consciousness than when you started. So what we urge is, you know, again, try to make it a higher priority. There's something calling this, and this is a very motivating time. And, you know, Rudyard Kipling's poem, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. So want to make best use of your time. You know, we'd say, oh, the thousand things to do before I die. Well, those can be fun, but the most satisfying, if you leave this earth completing your purpose and your potential, there is no other pleasure more satisfying than that.
Very well said. That is so true. And I just had a question. I want to dive deeper into what you said, that now is an opportunity there. Why is it now? Is it that our earth is evolving? Is it like a special time that it's our destiny? Is it the astrology, the universe? Like, why is now an even more important time to focus on this?
Well, it's interesting you're saying that, because in a way, a lot of things you said are playing into it. There is an evolution of the earth.
Okay.
There are epochs and periods of time. You know, the Hindus would say we came out of the Kali Yuga and there we're in the Dwapara age right now, which is mental stimulation time.
Okay.
We're also, some say we're in the Aquarian age, but our understanding is not yet. We're still in the Piscean, but we are moving into that Aquarian, which is a more of a period, a more of a cooperative time. But also, you know, we're just evolving as a civilization. So I know it feels like we're not at times, you know, but the Holy Ones have been
from the media. Well, if you watch the news,
I mean, I don't want to displace anything, but I mean,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. It, you know, having been in this thing, there's an old expression: if it bleeds, it leads. Right. And so
you
want to lead with the thing that will get the instinctual thing moving. But if you picture, our inspiration with the higher has been very clear. The doom and gloom scenarios out there are more humanity's projections of their worries and collective fears.
Yeah.
The world is actually
it's getting just a mirror. Yeah.
The world is actually getting better. And look how much more connected we are. How much as a planet healthier we are. I mean, I know there's problems now, but if you look at the world 150 years ago, Hans Rosling did these great things on how the world is actually better than you think. And he did this thing for health.
I love that.
Where health was, you know, 100 years ago, where much better now than it was then, collectively, much better, you know, than where it was then. There's more wealth on the earth than ever before. Yes, it's placed in terms of distribution.
Right.
It's still there. So what happens is, you know, there used to be a time when the mystical was revered, Let's say if we lived in the days.
Yeah, when was that? Was that like 1,000 years ago?
Even longer. Yeah.
Even longer.
Yeah.
When?
Well, the days of ancient Greece and the mystery schools.
Okay.
And mystery schools. This was, you know, if you were in a Greek, let's say the Eleusinian mysteries.
And that's your heritage.
It was like saying today, oh, I just joined the Navy SEALs. You know, it would be like, okay, that's a tough
it's
bar.
Top that you hit, echelon. Yeah.
But it would be very respected.
Yes.
That's interesting today. But about 100 years ago, and I have to say people like, you know, Helena Blavatsky and the Theosophical movement and the migration of the Hindu mystics to the West reawakened the ancient interest in metaphysics and realized there was this path. But the beauty of today is it isn't led by a single person or in a single place. It's kind of like a grass growing all over the planet, you know? And so people are sort of waking up in different parts of the world right now. And that is part of the collective consciousness. And there is an opportunity for a very bright future if collectively we can kind of get our act together, you know, and if a critical mass of people can kind of meet that standard, you know, there could be an enormous benefits of the future. There always have been individually, but it's nice if we can share it more collectively. Again, you and I having this conversation 100 years ago, 150, would have been impossible.
We'd have to do it in secret.
Yeah, exactly. So it tells you how, and it's because there's so many interested in it right now. Mm-hmm. And there's also more ready for the road. You know, we come in, our soul comes in ready. I think when I did have my awakening, it was like, I didn't realize how thirsty I was for this until it was there. And others are feeling the same way. I can't get enough of this. Well, that means the soul is crying out for that, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
The higher I've shared, there's never been a better time to grow spiritually than today.
Wow.
As things are. And if you are going through a tough time, you know, I love and the Chinese symbol for crisis and opportunity is the same symbol. So a crisis.
Very wise.
Mm-hmm. Right? So, okay, I'm going through a tough time. All right. But remember, the measure of your spiritual maturity is not the tough time. It's how you're handling it. You know, are you dealing with it? Are you confronting it? Are you doing your best to stay in a higher state or are you making it worse? You know, that's the measure of your spiritual maturity. So if we're getting tested, you know, it reminds me of, again, my film days. Now everything's digital, but in the film days when you would splice a piece, two film pieces together, you know, rape the thing, you put the glue, you'd stick it together, but then after you did that, that's how they
that
spliced.
Was editing? That was editing. Oh, I love it. My husband would love that. He comes from the film industry, by the way.
Well, that's how you did it. And the great movies were shot, they were edited that way. It was not digital. But my point is, at the very end, you'd pull on the film and twist it a little bit. And if the splice broke, it meant it wasn't very secure. So we have to go through that pulling and twisting in our life. We have it, this part of our life lit. But when the going gets tough, they say, you know, the tough get going, meaning if that area of your life is strong, you'll manage it. And by the way, if it isn't, don't berate yourself. Just say, okay, I need to strengthen this. If my left arm is not as strong as my right arm, I don't yell at my left arm. I just start exercising it more to make it as strong as my right arm. That's all.
Yeah, that's a very simple perspective.
Sure.
Wonderful. And when I talk to my clients about triggers, I say exactly what you said about the Chinese symbol. It's an opportunity. It's like, take a deep breath. Why am I getting triggered? Maybe there's a trapped emotion. Maybe there's something that needs to be healed. Well, of course, there's something that needs to be healed around it. And it's just a wonderful thing to notice, to feel like, oh, this can be healed within my life and I can just go higher and higher.
Exactly. And that's a very important point because people can feel victimized. Oh, well,
exactly.
Why am I going through this? I'm a good person. You know,
and yeah. Like I believe in God, you know, because God is never doing anything to you. You know, it's like we are co-creating our life. I mean, that's my belief.
Well, the point is if we're growing you have to go through the growing process. God can't.
Yes, that's how you learn, right?
So you have to go through the fire yourself. But you made a very important point, because when we are triggered, and the way we put it in our classes is, bless those that can push your buttons.
Oh, I love it. I love that. Yay.
Somewhere there's a weakness. Now you may say, what do you mean? Well, okay, I get pushed, and then you start to realize, oh, you know what? They disregarded me in this situation, and they triggered my feeling of low self-worth, that I'm not really valuable. And you may feel that again by not paying attention to me. So I got mad at you for that. But the reason I got mad at you is because I wasn't feeling worth it. If I was feeling confident, I would say, hey, just shut up or whatever. I might react a very different
way. Yeah, just blow it off or whatever. Yeah.
But there's a weakness. So, that's kind of the beauty of relationships, right? It brings out the good qualities, but it brings out other things in us, right? When you see your kid behaving like you, oh my God, they really are watching what I'm doing, right?
That's why I know my husband and I have conversations about this. I'm like, okay, remember when we were kids, okay? And even now, we maybe still do it, like you said, you know?
Well, that is the subconscious. So
subconscious, okay.
We can have seeds of these behaviors that, there's an old expression, give me the first 7 years of a person's life and you can have the rest, right? Because believe it or not, some of the basic energetic patterns are formed by age 7.
I have heard that.
Of course, they can change. You can change it. But yes, you hit another very important thing. Sometimes something triggers us and we realize, this is a pattern I've been doing for years.
Mm.
And if that's true, do something about it. You can
change. Amen.
You can rewrite that scenario. Don't victimize yourself. Barbara would often say, do you want to see yourself as the victim of your life or as the master? So the more you point the finger and you're saying the problem is there, the more you're victimizing you, right? And just take responsibility. Just say, I'm doing my part. Even in a marital situation, you're not responsible for the other person's, you know, you're not going to, oh, I'll change that person. I'll make them. you're not going to do that. Let them be them. Hopefully you're marrying them because, you know, you're taking all of it, right? The whole baggage, so to speak, good and bad. But they're doing it too. And you're learning from each other. That's really one of the most beautiful things is how we learn through the interaction with each other. How we learn about ourselves, in a sense, through the interaction with each other.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a partner?
A romantic? No, not at this time.
Not at this time. Okay. What about kids?
No. I did. You know, I was, it's funny. I was kind of on that road. Well, very much on that road.
Okay.
And, there was this gal I was going to marry and it was kind of moving in that direction. And that's when I had my awakening, was right at that moment. Yeah. So
interesting. So it didn't feel in alignment to marry her? Your awakening?
Well, no, it was clear. Then things took a very different
road.
A lot of people have their awakening after they've been married and had kids, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love kids. I love family. You know, my nieces, I love them to death. I'm going to one of my nieces' wedding. Oh, my God, she's getting married next week. So
congratulations.
Yeah, it's a great. Amazing. But again, I had to follow where I felt I needed to go. So
That's wonderful. It takes courage.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. I mean, definitely there's if you think the metaphysical path is an easy path, then it's all gonna be lilacs and roses. But it's gonna be a rewarding path. But
yes,
anything worthwhile takes effort, right? Anything. Mm-hmm. The more you put into it, the more you get out of it. So so we each have to follow, again, it goes back to following your heart, to following what you want. And if others at first don't understand what your inclinations are, again, Barbara gave me the best advice. Just love them anyway.
Oh, that's so beautiful. She sounds like a wonderful person.
She is. Yeah. She's kind of off the public lecture platform now, but.
Oh, I understand.
Many, many, many years. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did you ever have on your spiritual ascension journey, did you ever have a dark night of the soul? Like any just like, please, I don't want to do this anymore? Anything like that happened to you?
Not that. I've never not wanted to be on the road, but there's certainly been dark nights where, you know, the process, because kind of what happens as you keep going on the journey, as you may know already, you know, is that the parts of you that have not been quite in alignment with where you're headed, there's that time where it's the moment of truth. Are you going to stay on this, or are you going to not move forward as you could? You know, St. Paul said, I die daily, right? So we all have to go through that night. Actually, I get nervous when some of the students say, everything is all just fine. It sounds a little too saccharine, right? Some
thing,
oh no, I had a rough week. I had to deal with this, and I, you know, here's how I approached it. And I say, congratulations, because that's the work.
Yeah. You know, they're being in alignment with the truth of who they are.
Which means there's going to be challenges. There's going to be, you know, things are going to shake you, you know, and you're going to make discoveries about yourself that you didn't know were even there, were even possible, because you're trying to become almost something more beautiful than you already were, you know. And we've actually had some students say, you know, this work, well, Barbara's actually said people left this work because it was work. And some have said, you know, I see my friends, they're just having fun and doing this, and I'm doing all this work. Yeah, but look at what you're accomplishing. They're on their journey, but this is your journey. And look at the benefits you're going to get from what you're doing. The confidence, mm-hmm. the sense of the greater self. I mean, I feel stronger in the work, and I've been, again, in it 40 years now than I've ever been. There are not many things you feel that way about. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, I'd also like to say that when we're doing the work and transforming our lives and our spirit and ascending, it can have an effect on humanity and the collective. So it's not just about us. It's like we will affect, and there will be like that tipping point, like you said, hopefully, if enough people are waking up to this. What do you think about that?
Well, absolutely. You carry your light wherever you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And your others are benefiting because of that. You're a better person. You're handling situations better. So you are, you know, what Mother Teresa was saying, you know, it's like a fire. Light the fire in your own home first, and then it will kind of go from house to house to house to house.
Mm.
So that's how you want to kind of do it. Just be your best self. And you brought up another very important point. Metaphysics is not just about receiving, it's about serving.
Mm.
If you're not giving out, if you're not lending that helping hand, if you're not contributing, what's the point of all this, right? It's not just about you. Actually, the higher up you get in this, the less you think about yourself. And the more you are thinking about others and how you're helping here and how you're giving, it just becomes sort of a natural part of the journey. So when some people, I love the story of the chelas that would join the ashrams, you know, the real ones, there's some fake ones too. And they had a little on their shoulder, right? Oh, I'm going to be enlightened. I'm going to learn to meditate. I'm going to
be
the absolute. And so the guru would send them in the worst neighborhoods to work with the most destitute people, because they're trying to crack that personality, you know, that, that had got a little self-righteous about it.
Mm-hmm.
To serve, to say, look, this is not about you. This is about giving.
Yeah.
Yeah. So absolutely. Yeah. You take your light wherever you go. Yeah. And you are adding to the collective. And again, you know, the divine ones are trying to lift, because again, humanity needs to go through a collective evolution, not only for us, but for our children and our children's children. And wouldn't it be nice that one time we might reincarnate in the future and see the blessings of our own efforts without realizing we were part of that?
Or maybe from heaven, we could watch from heaven if we're not coming back, you know? That would be interesting. I love that. Well, I've noticed that in myself. Now I'm just being introspective about what you said about the service, because mm-hmm. I am thinking that, because especially like when I will post on social media some tips or something, I used to think, well, I mean, I haven't gotten any clients, or, you know, not enough or something. And now it's like, if I can affect one person, if one person is saying something that I touch them, then yeah, I find that, and I'm not as triggered by my son. My son is 11. He used to trigger me and yeah, he's starting middle school. I'll just be honest. He's like swearing and like angry and a lot of, you know, emotions and hormones and things. And, but because of like what you're saying, it was like so important to me to be on this journey. I am able to stay in that state of love for him, and his episodes are shorter. And he'll just click, something will change.
Great. Well, he is his own soul, right? But
that's right.
Agreement is, you are the mother, you are the parent. So you've got to play the parent role as you are, and your husband, and you know, just keep instilling all that good. And it may not always appear like it's sinking in, but you'd also
that's for sure. Like I just said,
really is, you know, even though on the surface there's a reactiveness right now. If there is something bothering him, of course, to share it. If he's upset about something, sometimes it could be school stuff or, you know, peer pressure and other things that are going on now. And hopefully there's nobody influencing him in a negative way. Quite frankly, I just marvel how there's I mean, I've tried to imagine times being 11 years old myself and having a phone that you can basically access anything, right? Even if it's not filtered. How much, it must be more work just training kids today, because there's so much more potential trappings right now that are going on. And even if you're monitoring one phone, well, this kid may have a phone that has everything on it, right? So how do you teach your kids, you know, to try to almost not look at all that, or take it in stride, or not feel you have to fall prey to it. It's a very interesting time right now, I think, for the young, in terms of all this information flood coming in. And now we're at the threshold of AI, which is going to bring its own thing. You know, I mean, it's already been here for a while, but it's now more
right.
Complex. Yeah.
And renamed, I think it was called Big Data before, but yeah, I think what you're saying is so true. And I didn't really realize it, you know, about like how you're saying being a parent and having them, how to teach the kids to filter this information. And I don't know the answer, to be honest. I mean, it's like we try parental controls and all that, but they're going to see it from their friends and all this stuff. So it's like giving, hopefully raising their consciousness enough to be like, I don't need that, or I don't need to watch that, or whatever it might be.
They feel they can talk to you about it. I think that's a big
Talk to me about it. That's a good point.
I feel it's a wall. You know, I have to say, my brother and his wife did a great job. One day I was over there, and Ellen was at a party, and evidently, I guess they had taught that. And this is in high school, and she called her mom, and said, "Mom, you know, there's drugs and drinking here," and her mom picked her up. But the fact that she was willing to call her mother in the middle of a peer party where there was a lot of partying going on, you know, and to realize, oh, okay, I can do that. I can call my parents. Yeah.
And she's not going to get in trouble. She's not going to be ridiculed. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's amazing. I need parenting lessons from her. Get ready for high school.
I'll be honest with you. She was tough. I remember one story when one was very little, and you know, she did something, says, "Okay, you better have time out, go in the other room and get your act together." And you know, and she goes, "I can stay here and get my act together."
Oh yeah.
Very sweet.
That is very sweet. See, so she's like, you know, she was her own person. That child, and my children are very strong willed and independent. And I'm like, that's me.
They just need tempering. They just need discipline. They do need discipline. But you do it on the front end. So on the back end, you know, by the time they're, because look, energetically, put aside everything else, energetically, there's a lot of changes that happen at 12 years old, right? Mm-hmm. We know that. You know, it's the awakening of the sexual energy, but it's a whole different part of the auric field that's also coming in at that time. Mm. And so the more they're prepared, and like this is like the time now, because like, you know, you're getting just into a whole just before a whole different phase is starting.
Okay.
That will help them as they enter that other phase, because from the auric point of view, they're an adult at 16. But up to that point, there is a karmic relationship very strong with parent and child, because if you're still developing, then you're not fully engaged yet. So this is why the parent exerts the authority, saying, mm-hmm. No, under my direction right now, here are the rules of the house. Now at 16 doesn't mean they're out of the house yet, but it means that energetically they're fully engaged. So they become more karmically responsible for their own actions from 16 onward.
So oh my gosh.
It's more than just sweet 16. You know, there's yeah. something that's going on at that point.
That's fascinating. I love how you're talking about karma. Your knowledge just spans through different cultures, the Hinduism, and bringing all this in. It's fascinating to me. And oh my gosh, I have so many questions for you, but let's dive into karma for a little bit. So do you feel that everyone has karma that needs to be healed? Because you were talking about that parent-child relationship. That means we were in a past life together where there was a different dynamic, and then we're coming into this lifetime. Like, how does this fit in?
Yeah, absolutely. We all come in with unfinished business. In some ways, it's like starting the novel at chapter 15. And you're picking up where you left off, but you don't have necessarily the full story. So the people now, family's so special because you can't just walk away from your family, right? You could
end some people do.
No, but that's a
badly.
That's a heavy karma when you do that. But the
point, yeah.
You know, you could just decide not to be friends. So no question, you know your children from past lives. Your children know you. So you and there was an agreement, by the way. You can't say you didn't choose your parents and children, because you did, you know. And sometimes it's very good karma. Sometimes there are things to be worked out. Absolutely. You want to look, you want to work that out, because karma is a harmonizing law. It's trying to bring things back into balance and harmony. Mm-hmm. It's not a punishment law. You know, it's not saying you did a bad thing, so you're going to be punished. But
yeah.
If I spilled the milk, I got to clean it up. Right. Now, we do some karma classes, and I have to say it's one of the most healing of all the classes, because, for example, there was one student had a lot of trouble with one family member and was kind of pointing the finger. Oh, you're not doing this, this, and this. When they understood more their own responsibility in that from a past life, their attitude to that family member completely changed.
Oh.
And not only did it affect her attitude, the family member's attitude changed. And then they realized, I need to take more responsibility for this. The challenge with karma is sometimes if I know we're running out of time here. If I hit somebody in the face right now and really hard, and I walk out of the room, for some reason, I get complete amnesia that I ever did that. And let's say this was my best friend, and I walk back into the room happy as a lark. What is my friend going to do with me? They're going to be pissed as heck at me.
you can't go back there.
Why am I, they don't remember what they did. We don't remember the missteps we took, but we're feeling the effects.
Mm.
And it's a soul lesson. It's a soul lesson. Karma is, do not walk away from your karma, because it'll only come back harder. Just face it, conquer it. And it's one of the, again, one of the most gratifying things to work through a karma. We often work through karmas without even realizing they were karmic.
Mm.
But we feel like, oh, I feel like this is not an issue anymore. You know, at that stage, it means you've worked it out. But if you have a little bit more awareness, yes. So, of course, karma, you would want to say, okay, if I'm having a challenge with a loved one right now, and I think there might be a karmic element, what's my lesson here? What am I supposed to do in this situation? And that's all you can do. You cannot control another person, but you can control your actions.
Mm, absolutely. Okay. What is Zen success to you?
I'm not, how would I answer that question? I'm not sure how to answer that.
Listen to your spirit. Close your eyes, take a breath. Like, what is it?
Are you talking about this podcast you have?
It's not this podcast. The word Zen Success. I don't mean the show, because that's the name of the show. I just meant, what does it mean to you when you hear it?
Well, I mean, Zen has the whole philosophy behind it, right? And it is very kind of living in the moment. And what's nice about it is also kind of clears the mind of a lot of clutter. You know, you look at the Zen gardens and they're very meditative and they're very, let's get out of this. So I would say it's taking that approach to success, to find that center, to find that oneness and not worry about so much the outer successes, but the inner real ones, the ones that are enduring. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. See, I'm glad I pressed you.
Okay.
It's like that can tie everything together, clearing out your garden, your karma, ascending spiritually. I love that. It's been such a pleasure getting to know you, hearing about your books and the Spiritual Arts Institute. Everyone will have to check out his website. So I'll put it in the show notes and how to connect with you. So thanks for being on the Zen Success Show, Dimitri.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Appreciate all you're doing. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode of Zen Success. Head on over to iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to shows. Subscribe to the show and share with friends. Be sure to head on over to zensuccessshow.com to help you on your Zen Success journey. And join us on the next episode. May you find your own Zen Success in life.